The first line of treatment for type 2 diabetes is lifestyle-based. It is well known that weight control and exercise are the mainstay of reducing insulin resistance. We know that with reduction in weight, insulin resistance reduces, and we also know that exercise is an excellent way of reducing one's blood sugar and also seems to reduce the insulin resistant. We no longer talk about a diabetic diet. A diabetic diet is a healthy diet. It's a diet that really everyone should undertake and is about sensible and healthy eating. For some people, lifestyle measures such as diet and increasing their exercise will be enough to control their diabetes for some time. And in a few lucky people, it will be enough forever. One should not forget, however, that diabetes is a progressive disease and the pancreas does produce less insulin as time goes on, whatever the person may do to try and control it. And therefore, medication will be needed in the majority of people at some point. As the years go by, more medication will need to be added as the disease progresses. If a patient is doing well with lifestyle measures of exercise and diet, they must not be made to feel guilty that it is their fault that the disease is progressing. Medication for the treatment of type 2 diabetes. There are a number of groups of drugs and many new ones coming on the market to treat this increasingly prevalent disease. However, the mainstay of treatment remains the first-line group, which are called biguanides. Metformin is one of the biguanide group, which is our first-line treatment for the majority of diabetics. They work by reducing the production of glucose in the liver so that blood glucose levels fall. And they also help to overcome insulin resistance around the body. The next group of drugs added, or sometimes used instead of this group as a first-line agent, work on the pancreas itself to stimulate the beta cells to make more insulin. These are called the sulfonylureas and tend to be used as a first-line in a patient who is not overweight. They can, however, be added to the first-line biguanides if needed. The newer groups of drugs are focused on various enzymes and hormones which are part of the cascade which stimulates the pancreas to produce insulin and suppress glucagon, thereby reducing blood sugar. They work at different steps of the pathway, and these drugs are called GLP-1 analogues, DPP-4 inhibitors or gliptins. The glitazones both reduce insulin resistance and make our own insulin work more effectively, and there is some evidence they protect the cells in the pancreas. The newest group of drugs, the SGL-2, work on the kidney and reduce the glucose absorption by the kidney and therefore reduce glucose in the blood. Remember that this is a disease that in some people will progress however it is treated. In a certain number of patients with type 2 diabetes, the pancreas will not be producing enough insulin despite all these agents that we have to treat it with, and patients will have to be started on insulin. When type 2 diabetics are starting on insulin, they often continue to take some of the medications that we have already mentioned, in particular metformin. In summary, to treat a type 2 diabetic, we would start with one medication, add a second, and often add a third so that a patient may take triple therapy. After this, we may use different groups and change the number of oral medications. But eventually, if all these groups have been tried, we may then need to progress towards insulin. Metformin is the main agent in the biguanide group now used to treat type 2 diabetics. It is the oldest drug we have available for the treatment of diabetes and is still one of the best and is the first agent used in the vast majority of cases. It works predominantly in the liver, and in the liver it reduces gluconeogenesis. This is the production of glucose by the liver. By reducing the liver's making of glucose, you therefore reduce the glucose in the bloodstream. However, metformin has another important mechanism of action, which is to reduce insulin resistance around the body. By this, I mean it helps the cells around the body work more efficiently with the insulin available and draw glucose into the cells and use it, thereby reducing the glucose in the blood. It's true to say that we do not know the precise way in which metformin does this, although there are a lot of theories. It probably works at a mitochondrial level on some of the enzymes in the mitochondria, but it is also known to work at many other places as well. Metformin is the most widely prescribed anti-diabetic drug in the world. Because of this, it is really important to us. It has been around for a long time, and there is clear and good evidence of its efficacy. It is particularly important because long-term studies have shown that it reduces cardiovascular mortality in type 2 diabetics over and above other lifestyle factors on their own. In addition to this, it has two other important features. It has a very low risk of reducing your blood sugar too low that you get a hypoglycemic episode where one can become dizzy and unwell. This makes it an extremely safe drug to use in the vast majority of patients. Equally important in type 2 diabetics, metformin does not increase weight, and this is also very important in treating the condition. For these reasons, it is an extremely safe, effective, and cheap drug, which is used worldwide in millions of people. It maintains its use, its efficacy against all the newer drugs which have come since. In addition to this, it can also be used in combination with some of the newer drugs, and so remains important for this reason. It can also be used in combination with insulin in type 2 diabetics. Another reason for its safety is that it has very little side effects. Yes, it can affect the gut, and a lot of patients feel a bit nauseous and can get bloating and gastrointestinal symptoms. But it has very few other serious side effects. There is a very rare condition called lactic acidosis, which is well known but rarely seen. But other than that, metformin is a safe drug. The only people it needs to be used with caution in is those who have kidney problems and kidney failure. It has very little interactions with other drugs. Remember, diabetics are often taking many other medications, and metformin can be safely used with all the other medications that diabetics tend to be taking. Metformin remains a drug to be very fond of. There are very few drugs that have been in use for as long as metformin has that remain in use in so many patients now. Yes, we have many new diabetic drugs, and some of them are very good and show very good progress. However, over the years, whilst the new drugs have been coming on the market, it is also true to say that some of them have been withdrawn and some of them have had warnings and advice given about their use. For example, in the last decade, a number of drugs in the glitazone group have been withdrawn from use, and a number of the other new drugs have had warnings about risks such as cancer, heart failure, osteoporosis attached to them. So you can see that whilst the new drugs have their place, they also have their problems, and they certainly seem to have more side effects than metformin. The side effects of metformin are mainly on the gastrointestinal system. Patients do complain of feeling nauseous when taking it, and some will complain of wind or diarrhea or changing their bowel habit or general upset stomach. It should be said that many drugs have these side effects, as do some of the newer anti-diabetic drugs too. The side effects of the metformin tend to be dose-related. The maximum dose can be 3 grams a day in divided doses, but most people tend to use metformin up to a dose of 2 grams a day, and this tends to reduce the side effects, or they are acceptable to the patient. Metformin is a well-known treatment of type 2 diabetics, and so patients have often heard about it if someone else in their family takes it for their diabetes. Because of the known GI side effects, as we mentioned earlier, patients either often stop the medication, metformin, because of the side effects, or don't want to take it because someone has told them about the side effects. This seems to be the commonest thing that is known about metformin, although, as I've said before, many drugs in fact cause the same symptoms. Patients can then try a second line or an alternative agent, and if they respond to it, that's great. However, many patients find the side effects of those drugs, in particular the weight gain, to be more of a problem than the side effects with the metformin, and will often come back and ask to have another go with the metformin. It's important to remember that if you start at a low dose and build up gradually, most patients will be able to tolerate a reasonable dose. In particular, compared to many other medications that diabetics take, the side effect profile is relatively low. Many diabetics take statins for their cholesterol, and the reputation and side effects of statin and the press coverage of these side effects is much greater, and many more diabetics don't like taking their statins than their metformin because of the muscle cramps. The other medication that a lot of diabetics take is aspirin, and the GI side effects of indigestion, reflux and bleeding from the aspirin is also greater than for metformin. Hypoglycemia is when your blood sugar is too low. This makes you feel unwell. You can feel shaky, irritable. You can feel like you're going to faint, and sometimes indeed do, and is not a pleasant sensation. Although people know about hypos in patients taking insulin, we must remember that some of the medication for type 2 diabetes can also cause hypos. As I said earlier, one of the best things about metformin is that it very rarely does this unless taken in excess, and that is what makes it one of the best and safest medications to take. Most of the other groups of medication that we mentioned earlier when talking about the progression through the different groups can cause hypos more commonly than metformin. In particular, the sulfonylureas can do this, and patients who are taking these medications need to know what happens during a hypo and what to do about it, so that they always carry sugar or something to take should they feel like this. The hypos with medication tend to be less acute than those with insulin, but remember, the drugs stay in the body for a long time, and so they can last a long time. Until recently, metformin was not used in pregnancy. Every patient with gestational diabetes was transferred to insulin until the pregnancy was over. Although it is not a licensed condition, most large units are now using metformin in pregnancy in patients who were previously known to be type 2 diabetic. This has reduced the use of insulin in some patients during pregnancy, which has been a great benefit to them. Metformin is also used in other conditions, for example, polycystic ovaries, where there is also insulin resistance. The evidence in studies for its use in this is varied, and it is not routinely used in the UK for this at the moment. It is also being used in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but again, it is an unlicensed use and the evidence is not good yet. The next big question for its use is going to be in the patients diagnosed with prediabetes or impaired glycemia. Should we start them earlier on metformin or give them longer to modify their lifestyle and other risk factors first? Best practice is not agreed as yet about this. Some doctors would certainly start metformin earlier in these conditions, and others would allow the patient time to look at lifestyle measures and monitor the disease. We know that metformin does reduce cardiovascular risk, and so the big question is, should we be starting it earlier? Clearly, larger long-term studies are required, but you may find that you are given conflicting information about this at present because we are still in a state of flux. As we have said, metformin is the first-line medication for most type 2 diabetics. However, this is when we diagnose them when they are reasonably well and in time. We have to remember that sometimes a type 2 diabetic will present as an emergency, perhaps because they didn't realize they had symptoms, perhaps because they didn't want to say they had symptoms. I had a young 38-year-old mother of three who probably knew she had diabetes as it was in her family. She had marked central obesity and a very strong family history and was getting more and more symptoms. But because she didn't want to face up to the fact she might have the diagnosis, she carried on for many months with her sugars getting gradually higher and higher. One day she got an infection in her kidney, and because she was very unwell, she became dehydrated and acutely unwell. And her sugars were so high that she was admitted to hospital with what's called a hyperglycemic coma, which is what type 2 diabetics can get. Because she was so ill, she was started on insulin while she was in hospital. Her infection was treated and her sugars came down so that she was feeling very well by the time she came home. We continued to maintain her on the twice daily insulin injections and her diabetes was very well controlled. However, she was a busy, active, working mother, and the fact of two insulin injections a day became a nuisance to her. She drives to work. She had to be aware of checking her sugar frequently throughout the day, and her sugar control was excellent. So good, it was in the normal range. It was clear that she didn't really need to be on insulin now that she was well. Over a few months, we gradually reduced the insulin and introduced metformin, gradually building up to a reasonable dose. She has now been on metformin and no insulin for over a year, and remains a very well-controlled diabetic and very happy with her metformin, given the scare she had and the 6 months on insulin, which controlled every aspect of her life.